We're in the Gemara Sanhedrin, Chav Tesamad Aleph. We finished the Mishnah. We just started the Gemara, so since over the weekend, we'll just start again from the beginning of the Gemara. We talked about how the witnesses were intimidated. And how did the Bezin intimidate the witnesses? We gave one example. The Gemara didn't like it, so we're just going to quickly run through that part again. So Gemara asks, Heichi Amrlu, what would the Bezin tell the witnesses to intimidate them? Amar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda said the following, Hachi Amrin Elho, this is what they would tell them. They said, Nisim, clouds, veruach, and wind, the geshem, and rain, and wind, clouds, and wind, it goes together, the geshem, oyin, but rain there isn't. The pasuk continues, Ish misalel, b'misa, b'matas shaker. When does that happen? When a man takes pride in a dishonest gift. And we said that talks on when a person gets monetary gain in a way that it shouldn't happen. And here it's happening when a person testifies dishonestly. When you dishonestly testify, then you're taking pride in a dishonest gift that you're giving to the guy who your lack of testimony benefits. So that's how they threaten them. In other words, they're saying, listen, if you're going to lie, then you know what's going to happen? There's going to be a drought and you're going to starve. So that's the way to scare them. Rava says that's not going to do it. Amar le Rava. Rava says to Rav Yehuda, the guy could say it doesn't bother me. Yachla Meimer, the witness, can recite the following adage that responds to the threat, which is Shav Shnei Havakafna. Let there be Shnei Havakafna. Shav is seven. Shav is seven. Shnei years. Hava, let there be famine. Let there be famine for 7 years. I don't care. Va'abava umna lo chalif, but it does not enter into the craftsman's door. Above is a door, umna is a craftsman's, lo chalif doesn't pass. In other words, if a guy's got a job, he's not a farmer, what does it matter? So that's as far as we got to last week. So therefore, Rava doesn't like this, so Rava gives another threat instead. Ela Omar Rava, but Rava says the following is what the admonition was. I mean, we say to him the following pasuk: Mefitz vecherev vechetz shanun, a club, a sword, and a sharp arrow goes to who? Ish oine vereyehu a shaker, when a man bears false witness against his fellow. In other words, when you testify falsely, it causes death to happen. All right? And that's just all over the place. That's just what happens. It's a pasuk. So you're going to cause death, and you could be one of the people that dies. Well, Ravashi says that's not going to be enough either to scare the guy. Amalei Ravashi. Ravashi says, Yochlu l'neimer, the guy can give back the following adage, and says the following, another Jewish concept. Shav Shnei Hava Mosana. There could be a Shav Shnei, 7 year Mosana plague. You could have a plague of 7 years, and where people are just dying. But the Inish below Shnei Lo Shachiv. But no man dies prematurely than what was preordained. In other words, it says, you know, everyone dies when their time is up. You know, Hashem brings them into the world with X amount of years. So, you know, you live till your time is up. So it doesn't matter. You're right. A lot of people will die, you know, when there's a plague and stuff like this. But those are all the people who are meant to die at the plague, you see. That was preordained that they would die at the plague. So in other words, God's preordained how long I'm going to live, so what do I care? Now, this really is not true, say the commentaries, because people are sometimes removed from the world prematurely. But anyway, but that's the adage that people had with them. So since that's the one they went with, for better or for worse, it would not scare them.
But these aren't Torah, they're just expressions?
No, yeah. See, the rabbis quote them a verse from the prophets, and these guys come up with an aphorism. All right? So therefore, so Rav Ashi did not like Rava's answer, so now Rav Ashi will give his form of what the intimidation is. Elamar Rav Ashi, Omar li Nosan bar Marzutra. This was told to me by Nosan, the son of Marzutra. Amrinan loho, we tell him the following. Sohadi shokri, witnesses who lie, a ogra yahu zile. are more contemptible even in the eyes of those who hire them to testify falsely. Even the people who hire them don't like them. Dichsiv, as the Pasuk says, and now we quote another verse from the Navi, V'hoshivu shnaim anashim b'nei v'lial negdo. And let them place two corrupt men opposite him. Hoshivu, let's place two people who are b'nei b'lial, corrupt people opposite him. V'iduhu le'mor, and let them testify about him, saying, Beirachto lakim v'melech, you have cursed God. No, beirach means blessed, but we don't want to say cursed. You have cursed God and the king. So the Pasuk are saying perjurers are referred to as corrupt by the very people who hire them. Let's go back. What would the first verse say? V'hoshivu, and these guys who want guys to tell, they're going to take two anoshim, and they themselves recognize, the people who are hiring them, recognize them as b'nei b'lial, corrupt men. In other words, you're going to get have notoriety that you're a corrupt person, because even the people who hire you will have you be corrupt. Now, what's this referring to, by the way? So this was when, what's his name? Achav wanted, the wicked king Achav wanted the vineyard of Navos HaKarmeli. Navos. Mm-hmm. Yeah, his thing. And he wanted to come, and he wanted it. He said, I'm not selling it. It's my patriarchal piece of land. So what did the king do? He hired two false witnesses to say he did a capital crime, and he just got him killed. Which the Navi was not happy about. But that's what the... So the king knew, as the king got them, he knew they're corrupt guys. So it's hard to understand the intimidation. I guess intimidation is, well, do you want to be known as a corrupt person?
Yeah.
You know, of the three, to me, this seems like this is the least intimidating of all of them. But, you know... Now, interesting, what is the halacha? So the Miri says, guess what? We follow all three opinions. That is, when the court gives the first issuing, if they see that the guy doesn't seem to be so nervous about it, then they make the second issuance. And if they still see he's not so nervous, they give him the third one. I don't understand why this third one, like the fact that you said, you know, it's going to be a starvation, nah, doesn't bother me. You know, it's going to be a plague, doesn't bother me. Well, people are going to call you corrupt.
That's impersonal.
Person,
man.
What? Yeah, but the guy really is corrupt.
Yeah,
but the guy is corrupt. I guess the politics. It's like politicians, you know. We know what they are, but they don't want to be called corrupt.
Yeah.
Oh, how dare you say I'm corrupt? You know that I'm going to sue you. Maybe it bothers him more. But anyway, those are the three intimidations that are said.
It's stronger psukim that you can take.
Well, truthfully, I mean, it is a lav. You're transgressing a lav.
Yeah.
But I don't believe that one carries malchus. This is a lav shein bo maisa. Even though we learned last night, some do, some don't.
Yeah, testify.
So we'll have. I'm not sure. We'll have to see. Obviously, I would say if it did have lashes, why wouldn't they intimidate him with that? I don't know, but I don't think we'll have to learn more as we go through this section of Rambam.
Secular court. What's the only threat? Is perjury? You go to jail.
That's right.
Court, right? Yeah. That has more effect than anything else.
That's if they're caught.
Well, Judaism has no jails, and I'm not saying
though, you punish the person, so, you know, lashes would be more effective than any of this.
Okay.
I think so.
We'll have to see, but I'm not sure if that one goes with lashes. We'll have to check out. Okay, let's move on. We go to the next part of the Mishnah, and now we're talking about what's the witnesses? Remember, they must testify what they themselves saw that occurred, not hearsay. That's the next part of the Mishnah. Imamar, if the witnesses say, "Hu Amar Li, this fellow told me," okay, or let's say he says, "I owe him." Let's say the guy even told me, the guy who I owe him. No, it doesn't work. Ad Sheyomru, until they can say the following. Bifaneinu hoda, in front of us, he admitted, Shuchayv Mosem Zuz, he owes 200 Zuz, in our presence. Okay? And in other words, he had to do it, and we were appointed as witnesses to verify the fact that that's what happened. So based on this, we'll see the reverse. The Gemara, from this, we can imply the reverse, which there's a number of statements of rabbis who said the reverse, and we're going to therefore say this statement of the Mishnah supports these following statements that people said, because this Mishnah is supportive of it. Gemara now says, based on this, Misayei Alel Rav Yehuda. This Mishnah supports a position of Rabbi Yehuda. What did Rabbi Yehuda say? The Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, the name of Rav said, what it has to be, what does the witness, what, if a person admits to another guy, and for him to be chayiv, what, how does his admission have to happen outside of a court, that now witnesses come in court and say, this is what he said? How does he have to say it? Sorech sheyomar. The guy who is saying I owe the money or whatever, he has to say to the two bystanders, Atem Aedai, you are my witnesses. Okay, and then that will now become a testimony for that. Now the Mishnah didn't specifically said that. The Mishnah said until he admits that he paid 200, he's just adding, he has to say, you are my witnesses.
Did we see that before? We had to designate them as
witnesses. I know, but I think I spoke it out. I spoke it out.
I think I spoke it out.
Okay, now, let's see the commentary for a minute. Were any admission in front of witnesses acceptable? It would have been sufficient for the witnesses to say, we heard him admit to the creditor. That's if any admission would have been. By stressing that the witness must testify, he admitted to the creditor in our presence. Hear the difference? The Mishnah says he admitted in our presence. It's not we heard him admit. You're going to say, what's the difference? Well, listen carefully. There's a subtle difference. The Mishnah implies that they had been designated as with. So I spoke it out. When you said we learned the Mishnah, because I already knew the Gemara. So I spoke it out. So Gemara is just saying, so that's what it's, so it just says we heard him admit, it's not good enough. He has said he admitted in our presence. You know, if they're acknowledging he did it knowing it was in our presence.
They were designated, yeah.
What do you mean in our presence? Because he knew we were there and he was saying, I want you to be the witnesses. So that's a support to that. Okay, you had a question or? Okay. Ikmar Nami, let's say another statement was said. Omer Rab Chiya Bar Abba Rab Yochanan. Chiya Bar Abba Rab Yochanan said, and it's in brackets. Mona Libiyotcha, if one person said to another, you owe me 100 zuz. Omer Lo Hain. And he said, yes, I do. Lamacha, the next guy he says, Omer Lo Tanoli. Okay, give me the 100 that you admitted to me. Amar, he said, Mishata Nibach, I was just joking with you. Right? And now he'll take him to a court and say, listen, he admitted to me. Don't you agree you admitted to me on Sunday that I owe you money? The guy say, yeah. So make him pay, he says to the judge. The judge says, do you owe him now? No. So the judge says, listen, he was probably joking around. He says he was joking around with you, right? He said, I was just joking. Potter, you don't have to pay the admission because it was not in front of designated witnesses. That's the point. Tanya Amiachi, a brisa again that supports that statement. Same idea. Mona Libiyachov, the guy says, you have $100 of mine in your hands. Amar Lehen, he says, yes, I do. Lamacha, the next day, Amar Lo, he says, Tanoli, give it to me. Amar Lo, he says, Meshata Nebach, I was just fooling you. Potter, you're Potter. He doesn't pay. And the brisa adds a little bit more. And furthermore, even if the plaintiff concealed witnesses behind the partition. So he has two witnesses who heard him say, I spoke this all out, that's why. The Omar Leo, and he said to the guy, with the witnesses behind the partition, it was a sting operation. Monali Biyotcha, you have $100 in my hands. Omar Leo, he said, Hain, yes. Now wait, and he says even more, but the guy doesn't know there's people behind the fence. Right, Ritzon Cheshetora Bifnei Ploni Ploni. Do you want? Would you even admit it in front of Chaim Yankel and Shmerel if I brought them here? Amarlo, he says, Mishar Ani Shema Tichmenadei. No, because I'd be afraid then you'd take me to court. So I wouldn't admit it in front of Chaim and Shmuel. Because if I did, then you would take me to court. But Chaim and Shmuel are behind the fence. So even though he's kind of played out his hand, now, Lamacher, the next day, Armelay says to Neili, give me the $100. Armelay says, Meshat and Ibach, I was joking with you. Pator, he's not liable to pay.
So those two now it's in, useless.
Right? Now it's interesting, footnote 30 told us, even according to the opinion that earnest admission is valid without designated witnesses, look at front. This admission is not valid because the one who admitted was unaware that witnesses were listening. At the very least, the debtor must be conscious of the fact that his admission is being witnessed in order for it to have legal value. What? Right, he hasn't. No, he said, because there's a footnote. The footnote brought an opinion that we don't hold, like, that an earnest admission is valid even without designated witnesses. We don't hold like it. So even according to that opinion, if he doesn't see any witnesses, you can't make him pay. That's all he's saying.
Okay, but on the other hand, shouldn't you be accountable for what you say?
Listen, Shelley, that's a different story. The guy was lying or whatever you want to say, but that's not actionable.
But he knew the law, this guy.
You know, it's not, people lie all the time, Shelley. This is not a new thing in the world. But the question is, can you take what they say as admissible evidence to say that we clearly understand from what he said he owes money? So if a guy says, I got two witnesses here, now I'm asking you right now, do you owe me the money or not? Well, the guy knows there's two witnesses. You know, this is the time to say what you want to say, because you know he's going to take it to a court, and now you have two witnesses. But Stam, I say, you know, when are you going to pay me back? I'll pay you back tomorrow. Oh, see, he admitted he owes me the money. And then he goes to court the next day. He says, I never say. What do you mean? You say you'll pay back? I was just pulling you off. I don't owe you nothing. So people lie. That's not anything new in this world. The question is it actionable in a court? Is it admissible evidence? That's the difference. And so, of course, a person shouldn't lie. A person shouldn't be joking around. You're right. That's wrong. No, and we can't, because a lot of times people lie just to get people off their backs, or we'll see a little bit on, or they don't want people to think they're rich as well. So you're right, people shouldn't do that, but, you know, again, as I say, emunah is not legislated, and this all has to do with emunah, because really, if you owe the guy the money, you should say, I owe you the money, and I'll pay it back. But he said, no, I don't want to lose the money, so. People lie, but lying alone is not, and it's certainly an avera between him and God. There's no question about it. But the only question is, can the Bezdin extract $100 out of the guy from that? Now you need solid evidence. To extract money, you need solid evidence. And just saying, you know, yes, I owe you money, that's not solid evidence. Especially when the next day, here's the point, the next day in question is, I don't owe you the money. So that, okay, so then I got to say, well, why did you say this? Well, yeah, I was just fooling him. Which happens all the time. What if?
What did you say? I didn't say.
I'll take a better example. So let's say, you know, there are people in the world who are not 100% stable, and they imagine things a little bit. Not that they're crazy, but they're just a little bit off. And let's say this guy thinks, Shelley, you know, one time 2 years ago he talked about borrowing money from you. You talked about borrowing money from him. You guys said, you know, I might need a loan from you. And I guess, yeah, I'd be happy to loan you. And it turns out you didn't loan him. But the guy's a little bit off, and he really believes that you borrow the money. Now, that could really happen. That's not for the guy. Nobody's evil here. Right? Now, he comes to you 2 years later. Shelley, you know, you owe me the money. So, what are you talking about? So then you say, I don't owe you the money. Fine. But down the gate, every hour comes to you for the money. After a while, what are you going to do? Okay, you know, yeah, I owe you the money. You know, don't you owe me the money? No. You said you... Okay, I owe you the money. Leave me alone. You know, you would do that too. Wouldn't you, after a while? You have to be accountable for what you say, but the guy's driving me nuts. You know, a lot of times, like, sometimes when I have to deal with people who are unreasonable... Sometimes I have to deal with unreasonable people, but the problem is, if I, let's say, sometimes people want to talk with me, and I don't, somebody, let's say, I had a case not long ago. A guy is not a member of the shul. I don't have any business with the guy. Right? And he's really like a bad guy. Like some people, like they're not nice people and they hurt people and this. And then the guy wants to talk to me. I don't want to talk to him. Like it's not like a member or something. It's just not. He wants to tell me that this like it's pigiyas and raw. Like sometimes you don't want to be in that vortex of these. They'll schlep you in. You know what I'm saying? So he said, you know, I'd like to talk to you tomorrow. So I say, okay. I just say okay. You know, if I say no right on the spot, he's going to yell and scream at me for half an hour. I've had this, you know, because I could really say no. I don't want to talk to you. Why not? Because you're a terrible person. That's the honest truth. You are a wicked person, and I don't want to be near you. That's what I would like to say. But you can't say, first of all, the guy might punch me in the mouth, number one. And number two, he'll scream at me even more, because why are you saying I'm not a good person? I mean, you have people like this. So what do I say? I say, yeah, okay, you know, call me tomorrow. You know, and then I'll make sure not to pick up the phone tomorrow.
That's too
much. Okay, sure. No, this case was, the guy was going to be, he was in town. I'm only in town for a day or so. I said, so call me tomorrow. Yeah. So I hope he'll forget. And if he remembers, I won't pick it up. And that's all. And then, you know, and then it's gone. And then I avoided dealing with the situation. I said, call, you know, so I try to not lie, though. I say, call me tomorrow. I say, call me tomorrow. I didn't say I'm going to talk to you. I said, call me tomorrow. You know, I'll see if I have time to call you tomorrow. Give me your number. So at least the guy feels good. I took his number now. I didn't call him. But I'm saying, so we always have that. So a guy would be nudging you, Shelley, you know, don't you owe me the money? And after the 17th time, say, yeah, I owe you the money already. They don't take you to court. So that's what happens. All right, next. So it says, I could fool you. Now, although a person says I could fool, so what really is happening, listen over here though, it's interesting, the court really is, as it was, taking the side of the defendant. In other words, on the one hand, you're looking, this is what we have on the ground. The guy says, didn't you say yes or you owed me money? Yes, I did. And now today you're saying I don't owe you the money? That's correct. Now the Bezdin will, and so the Bezdin says, now tell us, now which one is it? Do you owe them? I don't owe him the money at all. Yeah. And that's it. So why did you say that? Well, I just was pushing him off. I was fooling with him. Now the question is, the Bezdin, well, which one was the true statement? So the Bezdin says, well, it seems that, you know, we can't make him pay. So the expression of Gemara is, the Bezdin, so to speak, advocates for the defendant. In other words, we allow that explanation to hold. Okay? Now, why am I belaboring the point? Because now the Bryce is going to say, but we don't do this kind of stuff for really rotten people. We don't give them that benefit of the doubt, or we don't say it to try to interpret it in their favor, which is what? Ve'ein to'anin le'maisis. However, the court does not plead on behalf of an instigator to idolatry. That's what the Bryce says. This is all the Bryce. Gemara says, wait a minute. Mala Gemara says, who is talking about people trying to instigate people into idolatry? Macy's man docher shmei. Who's talking about an idolater here? So Gemara says, no, you got to know this. Chesure mechzor. There's a couple of words missing in between the Bryce. Well, this is the way you have to read it. This is the way you have to read it. Again, we're going to the guy says, you owed me 100. Yes. Then he goes to the court and says, no. And we say, well, because he said I could have fooled you. Now, let's go further. Now, here's an important point. Im lo ta'an. What if the defendant doesn't make that claim that I just said, that I was fooling him? What if the defendant said, he said yesterday I owed him the money. Yeah. And what about you say today? No, I don't. Now, if the guy isn't clever enough to say, and they say, well, why'd you say this? I don't know, I just said it, you know. Now, if he's not clever enough to make this claim that I was joking with him, right? So it says, im lo ton, ain't ton in lo. If the defendant does not plead that his admission wasn't just, we don't plead it on his behalf. All right? In other words, if the defendant does not claim that his admission was made in jest, but instead challenges the plaintiff to produce witnesses to the loan, his defense is rejected its right to pay based on his earlier admission of liability. The court does not on its own consider the possibility that the admission was made jokingly. That's an important point. You know, you hear what the Bryce is saying. When the guy says, well, yesterday I said, oh, today I say no. Well, why do I don't know. So Bezdin is going to say, well, maybe it's because he was joking with him. No, we're only going to accept that if he claims it was a joke. That's the little part that's missing in between the lines. And now, so what does it come out? It comes out, so from the Braisa, if the guy says I was joking with you, the court will accept it. And that's it. If the guy doesn't say it, we won't say it for him. Okay? Money, 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 money. We're sticking with money right now. This is the missing link in the Braisa. This is what's missing in the Braisa. Okay? And if he doesn't make the claim that I was joking, we don't make the claim for him. Now the Braisa, we have to put in a few more words. Ubadin and Avashos, but in capital cases, regular capital cases, not adultery, regular capital cases, Avagav de lo ton, even if he doesn't make an advance, a plea, a reason, Toninlo, we will for him. In other words, if there's a viable line of defense of which the defendant is unaware, the court will consider it on his behalf. Why? Because we don't want to kill people, right? This practice is based on the verse, open your mouth on behalf of the mute. Speak up on behalf of one who cannot do so himself. We follow this practice in capital cases because the Torah says, regarding the judgment, it says, v'hitzila ha'eda, the congregation shall rescue the defendant, meaning the court will seek to exonerate him. In monetary cases, the court pleads on behalf of the defendant only in an instance where he cannot be expected to be familiar with the details of his case, such as an heir who was brought to trial by his father's creditor. In other words, what's going on over here? The Bryce is saying three things so far. If it's a direct monetary case, listen, the guy says you owe money. You told him yesterday you owe him the money. Today, what do you say? I don't owe him the money. Well, why did you say yesterday? Well, I don't know. We're not going to advance any reasoning for him. Well, you're going to have to pay. You said yesterday you got to pay him, you got to pay him. If he will bring up, I was joking with him, okay, then we'll accept that because that fits in. But we're not going to make the plea for him that he was joking with him. That's monetary case where the guy knows what he was doing. Different case of monetary case, let's say heirs. They don't know their father's business. So a guy says, you know, your father owed me $100. Now the heirs can't defend themselves. Here the Beis Din will try to find something to help them because how are they going to know? They could say, well, maybe this was the situation. Maybe that was the situation. And they'll look into it. So that they'll do. Okay, but that's only when the person in the monetary case has no way of knowing how to defend himself. But if the guy does have a way to know to defend himself, we don't defend for him unless he brings it up. Now let's go to death penalties. Death penalties, since death is a much severe thing, the Beis Din is going to plead more for him. So even if it's possible or it's likely that the defendant should have known this form of plea and he doesn't say it, we will say it for him. Because we don't want him to die. If it's a reasonable doubt, as they would say, well, maybe this and this happened. Whatever, you know, whatever it was, you know, the guy is, you know, there. I don't even know how to contrive the case, but the evidence looks pretty bad. And what do you have to say about it? Well, I wasn't so clear myself what was going on there. You know, it could be sometimes people get very nervous and they forget. In the court, I'm sure you've seen people. You get very scared and you get all confused. You don't know what you're saying. And then the prosecutor says, "See, we've proven the guy's." You know, and just wait a minute. We're dealing with this guy's going to get killed. Well, we have to be absolutely sure. Well, maybe we're going to advance some possibilities. Remember, we cannot kill the person unless the business is absolutely sure. Let's get 23 judges here, right? We got to be sure that the guy killed him. So now, even if he doesn't advance a plea, we will plea for him if it's reasonable. Okay? That's for death cases. Now, that's what's all missing in between the lines. Now we bring the line that was brought up, and now we see the connection. But what about a guy who is a missionary? He's trying to take Jews away from Yiddishkeit. And we have witnesses to this. And the guy, to defend himself, the missionary doesn't know how to plead for himself. But there is a plead we could say for him. Now, if he's guilty, he gets the death penalty. Do we make the plead for him if he does not make the plead? And that's what the Braisa said. The ein toadin lemesis. We don't plead on behalf of an instigator. That's where it fits in. You see the scale over here? From money cases to death cases to instigators. Now let's see the case. If witnesses testify to the fact that someone instigated others to idolatry, the court is not obliged to seek his exoneration, which we're going to see in a minute. Therefore, even if his actions can be defended, the court will not consider the offense if he does not plead on his own behalf. Now, certainly, if the instigator does plead on his behalf, says, well, I was joking, or whatever, and it was reasonable, let's just say, you know, whatever, you know, then, okay, you know, then that's something for us to consider. But for us to bring it up, we're not going to bring it up. To which Gemara asked, that's the end of the Brice. Gemara says, wait a minute, what's going on over here? My shlomesis, why is an instigator different? The Torah says you're supposed to try to figure a way to save the guy. Why don't we save this guy? The answer is because the Torah tells us specifically by an instigator, we're told not to try to save the guy.
Amesis means he's on trial for being
amesis. Amesis is a person who tries to sway other people to idolatry. He is on trial for it. On trial for being an instigator. There were witnesses hiding behind the fence. Yeah. Right? Same thing. They overheard him, what he was doing. Mm-hmm. They saw a guy from that tchveis, that temple on Young Street, whatever, the missionary temple. The guy goes over and says, listen, come on. Goes to a Russian Jew who doesn't know any better, right? Here, you want to go for holidays? Here, you're going to go to heaven? Here, just remember Yashka, you know this. And there's two guys that see the whole thing, right? So anyway, so Nagmar says, so why is an instigator different? Amar Rab Chama Bar Chanina, Rab Chama, the son of Chanina, says, Mi Pirkei de Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Shmili, from the lectures of Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, I learned the following reason. And where he said, shiny maces, an instigator is different, derachmona omer, because the Torah itself says, quote, lo sachmol, have no mercy, velo sechase all love, and you shall not protect him. That's what the Torah says about a guy accused of this. Okay, so that's clearly, so you don't even want to be close to that, because no one's going to defend you on that.
So the maces is saying he was joking?
The base, yeah, I was joking. I said, listen, we're not going to do nothing. We don't plead nothing on your behalf. Unless you really could prove it to us. You know, we're much stricter. It's not something, we don't joke about taking people away from Yiddishkeit. Now, again, if the Bezin thinks he's sincere, okay. But we don't give him any benefits of the doubt. Listen, he's entitled to defend himself. He could have a successful defense. But the judge would have to be happy with that defense. Other cases where, you know, the guy may have not the best defense, but there's a reason to hear maybe it's late, right? But the point being, we generally, in a death penalty case, we try to help the guy out to not convict him unless we absolutely must, right? We will go to great lengths to try to find a way to exonerate him because we don't want to kill a person. But when it comes to the Macy's, if he honestly can exonerate himself, fine. But we're not going to go out of our way to do it. That's what it's saying. We have no compassion on these guys.
So do these guys have to be mourned too, like in the other Catholic?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll have to learn all those laws of Macy's.
You guys just saw the guy pulling his...
Okay, we'd have to go through all the cases there to see what would work. Again, maybe that admission. But I think there, you Badafka can do that, if I'm not mistaken. You can plant witnesses for that. Because this is a very severe crime. This is not a small little thing.
No, I get that, but I'm just saying.
And I don't even know if you can warn them for. I don't even think. I'm not sure if you even have to warn them.
I don't think so.
Because if you're going to warn them, of course you can say, no, I'm not. Usually, that's the nature of missionaries is that they do it very clandestinely. It's not like they go out. I don't think the missionaries here, they go out and make public
crusading.
I don't think so. They go house to house. They go house to house. They one on one. You know, so that's okay. Now let's just do one more thing. So how do we know? How do we know? Let's say another one more point. Now we have a scriptural source, but how about a historical source? Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman Rabbi Yehonasan. So he says the following: Minayin Shein Tanu Lemeses. Where do we learn a story in the Torah that we don't plead for an instigator? The answer is Minacha Shakadmoni, from the evil snake. The evil snake, wasn't he a Macy's? Didn't he tell him to go against God? Yeah. Now, what did God do to him? We see that God had no mercy on the snake. Domrav Simloi, because Simloi says, Harba ta'anas haylo l'nachash litam lotan. The serpent could have made many defenses to himself. Remember, Hashem punished the serpent. So when Hashem said to the serpent, he could, well, what do you have to say? The serpent could have given many excuses. We'll see in a minute. He had many ways to get out of it. But he didn't say anything. So now questions may be named Malo Tanaka. So why didn't Hashem bring up some of his defense? Hashem could have defended him. Answer is Lefi Shalo Tanhu, because the serpent didn't plead it. And that's the point. We're seeing that since he was a Macy's, as it were, so he was treated as an instigator because he caused Chava to rebel against Hashem. So now the Gemara wants to know, so what could have he pleaded to get out of this? But Hashem didn't plead it for him. That's the proof already. Where it says, my Havalei Lameimer, what could the snake have said should he chose to say? Very simple. What would be his defense? What's God's accusation to say? Well, why did you tell her to eat it? So the snake could say, I told her to eat it, but she shouldn't have listened to me.
I was joking.
Why? Not I was joking, but Divrei HaRav, V'Divrei Talmud, Divrei Me'ashomim. When the teacher says words and the student says words, which words do you obey? You obey the teacher's words, right? Divrei HaRav Shomim. You listen to the teacher's words. So God said, don't eat from the tree, right? I said, yes, eat from the tree. So of course you shouldn't have listened to me, right? Now, a question is asked, wait a minute, based on this, wait a minute, we just blew the cover over the whole way of prosecuting a missionary. If this is a valid argument, then every instigator can defend himself with this thing. So the snake didn't say it. Okay, Chacham, I'm going to be smart. I will say this. He shouldn't have listened to me. So how is the death penalty that a Torah prescribes for an instigator ever carried out? Tosfos answers, since the Torah expressly prohibits instigation to idolatry, right? The reason for an instigator's liability is not the sin that is done at his urging, but the urging itself. It's the urging. By the forbidden fruit, God didn't say there's a prohibition to instigate against the eating the fruit and forbidden fruit. But here when God says there is a prohibition against instigating, so we're getting him on that. On instigating, not for the sin that, you know, hear what we're saying? It's not that you have to be a successful instigator. It's not that we only prosecute you when you successfully get people to go away. Yeah. We say you're guilty even for trying. Yeah. Trying, there's no way out. The serpent, on the other hand, was never prohibited from instigating man to sin. The reason he was liable then was not the instigation itself, but the resulting sin. This is the serpent. Now, let's think about this. What is the snake's job? The snake's job is to instigate. Right? Yeah. So now, really, the snake could have gotten off the hook. He could say, listen, I did what you told me to do, and she didn't have to listen to me. Right? So but he didn't plead it for whatever reason, whatever that means. And Hashem won't plead it for him. But an instigator, we're putting him on trial not for successfully converting Jews, for trying. So he can't say, well, they shouldn't have listened to me. Okay, maybe they didn't. How about this? What if a guy comes, the minister says, listen, come and bow down to Joshua? He says, no. And he didn't. He got a failing mark. He went to 20 Jews. They all said no. So then what? We still will kill him. Because you try. That's the point. Okay, we'll stop over here. Very good.